Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Just before we jump into the episode this week, I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections, like the main Thrive community feed, where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones, because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are Thrive events, there are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section, and then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well, and in the knowledge hub you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days. So if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program. There's a toolkit. There's understanding the brain science and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. It's going to be a little bit of a special one today, actually. And the reason for that is because this episode is my 100th episode. I couldn't say that then. And it's amazing to think that this is actually the 100th episode of this tiny little show that I started off the back of wanting to bring other people's stories to life, because when I was getting sober, that was what I was drawn to. That was what I really appreciated, hearing other people's stories, how other people were coping and handling life without alcohol, and just trying to gain a new perspective, some inspiration, and some comfort, I think. You know, listening to other people's stories really provided a comfort that I was lacking, especially, I would say, in the first year of getting sober. So I thought, to mark the celebration of my 100th show, I would share some reflections of a sober journey, particularly at this time of year when the festive season, it brings up a lot for a lot of people. Maybe you are just starting out with not drinking. Maybe you're several months in, but it's your first Christmas. Maybe you're not even sure that you want to go totally sober. You're perhaps more sober curious, and you're looking for some insight, some direction, a sign perhaps that maybe this is the right thing for you. I know for myself, when I was in that sober curious phase, and what I mean by that is I was kind of flip-flopping between really wanting to stop drinking, but really thinking, I don't want to stop drinking. You know, it's a weird place to live. I often describe it to people that I work with a bit like the revolving doors into a hotel. You know, on the street, that's the kind of drinking land. And in the hotel is sober land. And you just kind of get stuck in these revolving doors of sort of like, shall I? Do I want this? You know, no, I don't want this. I'm surely not that bad. Oh, but I really am fed up of my drinking, you know, and it's just, it's a dichotomy. It 1 minute you're in one energy and the next minute you're in another. And you can get stuck there for a long time. I got stuck there for a really long time. And it can be frustrating to be in that place because sometimes you're so congruent with your decision to want to stop. But then it's almost like if you sit on it for a while, or if you actually then go to make the actual changes, you know, you actually want to take action and it just like something stops you, or you stop yourself, or your brain convinces you that no, don't do this now, do this another day. And so that is a very, what people would now call kind of sober curious phase. There's a part of you that wants to stop drinking, but there's still very much a part of you that doesn't want to stop drinking or is afraid to stop drinking or actually just wants to learn how to drink better. You know, that I just want to learn how to moderate. You know, that is the ultimate prize in that sober curious phase, is can I just actually retrain myself or convince myself on some level that I can control my drinking in every situation? Because that's the key, isn't it? When I was in my moderation phase, I could moderate sometimes really well. You know, I was good at moderating a lot of the time. Okay, yeah, it took effort. It really took effort. And it's only on reflection that I think you really appreciate how much effort that phase takes. It's quite exhausting thinking about what you're drinking, planning out the number of days you're not going to drink in a week, making sure you stick to one flavor of drink or one color of drink. You know, for me, I went through phases of I won't have red wine because red wine, you know, is too heavy and it whacks me, makes me drunk quite quickly. But then it was, I'm not going to have white wine because white wine makes me a bit of a psycho. I get really teary. I can't stop crying on white wine. And so, you know, there are all these like little conditions that you implement that you think are going to keep you safely on the track of moderation. And so you can perhaps moderate 2-3 times. Maybe you can moderate for 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe you can do it for a couple of months. But the thing with moderation is the wheels always come off at some point. If you're someone that's in the energy of I need to moderate, that is a big insight into problematic drinking, because people that don't have problematic relationships with alcohol don't have these kinds of conversations with themselves. They don't need to think about moderating. They don't need to limit the number of drinks, the numbers of nights they drink, the type of drink they have, the color that they have. They don't go into social situations or very sociable seasons like Christmas or, you know, Easter or big birthdays or weddings. They don't go into those events with a residual anxiety of, well, maybe I might not pull it off actually on that occasion. You know, maybe I will just suddenly go too far, because on some deep level, you know that that's in you, right? Because you do that. That's what you do. That's your pattern. That's the whole reason why you're probably here listening to this podcast in the first place, is because you have a rucksack of experience of where you feel like your alcohol intake has kind of failed you in some way. You feel like you've gone too far in the past. You know, that's a behavior that you're familiar with. And maybe you were like me in that you would moderate, you would convince yourself that you were actually nailing it. You know, you'd got it this time. Things were going quite well. You can stick to a bottle of wine in the evening. And you can actually manage to mostly not go over that bottle of wine. That was my threshold of moderation. That was my signal to myself that I was moderating, which, you know, blows my mind now, because a bottle of wine is a lot. But I would work very hard at sticking to that one bottle, because that signified to me that I could moderate. Didn't matter that I was doing it three or four times a week. You know, the fact that I would manage to not open the second bottle was, you know, would make me feel really good. And there were plenty of times where I would open that second bottle. And there were plenty of times when I wouldn't stick to the rules. And those were the things that sort of lived in the depth of my core that were always there to make me feel anxious and frighten me. And it was that feeling of living on a knife edge. Like, will the next time I drink be the time when I do something absolutely ridiculous and stupid that I'll really regret? And I hated that feeling. I hated the way that that had a hold over me, that I always had that anxiety inside, that at some point, it was almost like it was never a case of if the wheels fall off. It was always a case of when will the wheels fall off? Because I know that's coming. So, yeah, you could be in that place at the moment where, hey, you might not even know that you're going to be sober for Christmas or sober in January and that's it for you. You know, perhaps you're on the cusp of even considering that as a decision. It might not be a firm decision. It wasn't for me. I it's called spontaneous sobriety. So I always knew that I wanted to stop, but I had no fixed date and I wasn't sure if I ever could, if I'm being honest. I'd had stints of sobriety before, but I felt like I'd failed at that because I'd gone back to drinking. But one day I woke up and something had clicked. Something had clicked. My mind got into a different gear and the pain was too much. The thought of giving up drinking felt easier than the thought of continuing. And that's when, for me, I just made the snap decision. That's it. I'm done. It was literally like that. One day in April in 2019, I woke up after a very heavy night out with friends, blacking out, all the things. One of those nights where the wheels fell off. In the run up to that night, I'd moderated quite well and convinced myself I'd be okay. And I wasn't. And I think I'd just done that enough times to tell myself, you can't do this, Terry. You cannot actually moderate. Who are you fooling? You can't do it. And I think I sort of just accepted it. And I woke up and I said, that's it. And I was terrified. I mean, I was very depressed, actually. The thought of not drinking again and having to tackle this huge mountain, one that I felt like I'd walked up a couple of times before and then just thought, nah, this is not for me, and came back down to, you know, the ground where we were drinking again. The thought of having to go back up that mountain and be like, no, this has to work this time. Like, this has to work. We have to make this work. That was so terrifying. I honestly, I'm just, you know, thinking back on that, I was quite depressed, to be honest. I felt so very low for that day, particularly that day, but, you know, even the days following that decision. Part of me felt relieved, I'll be honest. There was a relief that came, and I can't remember if that was the next day or that night, or I don't think it was immediate, because the immediate feeling was despair. But the more I just got into the energy of, we're doing this, this has to happen, that we don't get any more lives, you know, 9 lives are gone. If I don't do this now, I just knew something would happen, something bad would happen. And once I'd got into that energy of acceptance, I suppose, everything got easier. Yeah, that's not to say there weren't challenges. There obviously was, but I felt comfortable, I suppose, with the decision that I'd made. And so today's episode really is kind of, now that I'm just over 5.5 years, I'll be 6 years sober in April 2025. Where does that 6 years go? Honestly, it just feels like it's gone in a flash, really. But you know, it wasn't always like that. And I think what I wanted to do with today's episode is to just give some deep reflections on the sober journey, what I've learned, and to just share, maybe just share some slightly different stuff that you may or may not have heard in books or in other podcasts, or at least summarize some of the bits, some of the best bits that have helped me, just to offer that wisdom in this festive period where probably a lot of you are feeling maybe a bit unstable, you know, maybe a bit shaky. Even if you know you won't drink, it's a challenging time. It's a challenging time. You know, next week it will be Christmas. It's the 17th of December today, so we're really close to Christmas. And there'll be a lot of you listening to this wondering how that might go. How does this look for me? Will I enjoy it? Will I even enjoy Christmas Day or New Year's Eve, New Year's Day? And what is my new normal? What does that look like? So I'm going to run through some things in no particular order. I've made some notes in front of me in true ADHD style. I literally made these notes 5 minutes ago. But I have been thinking about doing this special episode for a while. And I'm delighted that I've managed to get round to actually recording it. And I genuinely hope that it will help somebody listening just feel a little bit better about what's happening. Or what's coming, what's coming up. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is, what is the story? And there are two parts of this that I think are important. There is the story outwardly, if you like, and that's kind of what's the story that you are telling people, telling others, sharing with your friends, your family, especially at a time when you're probably going to be getting together with people a bit more, or maybe people that you haven't seen for a long time. There might be people that you haven't told yet that you're not drinking. There might be anxiety around having that conversation. Of course there will be. This is new. New doesn't have to mean bad, but it definitely means different, okay? And different feels uncomfortable until it gets more familiar. And when it gets more familiar, it feels more comfortable. So I'm going to talk about that part in a second, but I think the first part of this is about, what is the story that you're telling yourself? And I think that's so important, because the way that we frame our experience will actually impact the energy, and that will impact how we move through the minutes and the hours and the days. So let me break that down so that makes sense. For example, ask yourself really honestly, how do you actually feel at the moment about what you're doing? So, you know, for me, when I was early on in my journey, the first days, I definitely felt frustrated. I was saying things to myself like, why can't I just drink like everybody else? What's wrong with me? You know, why does it have to be me? Why me? Why do I have to stop drinking? You know, why can't I be like so-and-so and such, who can, you know, take it or leave it, or looks like they can drink really well? Now, I think I don't want to invalidate this, right? Because I think that feeling that sense of, it's almost like a sense of pity, it is part of the journey, right? It is part of the journey, and it is human behavior as well. And I don't want anyone to feel bad for having those feelings. I think we have to normalize how we feel. How we feel is how we feel, right? And if we start to berate ourselves and clamp down on how we're feeling, or judge ourselves for how we're feeling, that's just going to make everything feel 10 times heavier and a lot worse. But are you noticing the conversation that you're having in your head? Have you thought deeply about how you actually genuinely feel about this? Have you managed to weed out those types of thoughts? I'm a big fan of journaling. Even if you don't journal every day or every week, like there are always very useful times to focus on a bit of journaling ad hoc, let's say, if that's the most that you feel comfortable with. And so this would be an area that I would really recommend doing that little bit of self-reflection work. What is the story that you think about your sobriety? Have you managed to connect properly with the thoughts that are coming up for you and what they're saying and what they look like? And the reason why this is so helpful is because awareness is key, okay? Awareness is everything. It's everything in sobriety. It's everything in the journey of self-development. It's the most important starting block of change is being aware of how you feel, what you're thinking, and what your inner story looks like. Because it's only when you can see what that looks like, you can then see objectively, perhaps you will write these things down on paper, and maybe you come back to them later on or the next day and reflect and think, now I want to see if I can look at this in a slightly different way. I wonder if there's some space here to reframe what I am thinking and feeling about my journey into sobriety or my journey of sobriety. So if you're feeling a lot of, this is not fair, everyone else is getting to enjoy Christmas and it won't be the same for me, you know, that kind of more, let's say, unhelpful, perhaps negative mindset energy, that is actually going to play out into your lived experience. So this becomes really, really important, because I'm a huge believer in that your thoughts show up in your results. So actually, if there is going to be a breaking of sobriety and a moment where it's kind of like, F it, I'm going to have a drink. Actually, when we look back, we can see that perhaps our thoughts and the work around our thoughts might be missing. And that actually, if we fix our thoughts a little bit, so acknowledge them, yes, of course, but then reframe and put that energy and effort into reframing our experience, we might have more success when it comes to navigating those very difficult moments where we feel like we might break. And so, you know, what does reframing look like? How do you reframe your story? Well, I think it's about being, first of all, it's about making sure that you really know what the story is and being honest with yourself, being radically honest with what you're thinking and feeling, even if that doesn't look very nice on paper. Just being very open to that and being very honest. But then I think it's about being creative and thinking about how else can I look at this? You know, if almost picture picture a bucket of thoughts inside a house, right? You're looking at them through the front door. That's the first time you're acknowledging and seeing those thoughts. Now close the door and go around to the side window. Look at them again. What do they look like? Can they look different? Can you expand your capacity for thinking about them in a different way? So, for example, the way that I would do that is I would very much feel like, oh, it's not fair. I've got real FOMO. Every party I'm going to go to now is going to be rubbish. And then I would think about myself as a drinker, and I would challenge myself to see the darker bits of those drinking experiences and how that would make me feel. And I'd kind of connect the dots on that. And then I would think about, but actually, you know, have I got any evidence of where I do have fun when I'm not drinking? And of course, I did have. I mean, I didn't drink in pregnancies, and I'd had stints of sobriety before. I'd been to certain occasions or events where I wasn't drinking, and I didn't not enjoy those events because I wasn't drinking. I mean, look, sometimes that was the case, of course, like if I was forced to be the designated driver, that would be quite annoying as a drinker. But my point is, it's about tuning into the openness to collect the data and evidence from your life of where you've actually managed to cope, operate, and enjoy times without alcohol. I would think as well about, well, what might I gain from not drinking? Okay, so when we think about next week, we've got Christmas Eve, we've got Christmas Day, we've got Boxing Day. In our minds, we've got a set way of how we've probably done those events. They've probably involved drinking and drinking early on in the day. And so the fear is almost, what does it look like now that I won't be doing that? How does that look? Like, the brain doesn't probably have a lot of data on how it looks to be sober on Christmas Day. What do I do when everyone's clinking champagne at 10:30 and I'm clinking my alcohol-free Kylie? You know, like, how does that, you know, it's normal to have that fear and anxiety about that. So I would challenge myself to think about what things could be positive about not drinking on Christmas Day. What things are normally annoying in my past when I've been drunk on Christmas Day or hungover on Christmas Day? And sort of trying to just connect and line those things up, replacing those thoughts of, oh, it's so rubbish that I don't get to drink, with, oh, actually, it might be really nice to wake up and feel fresh, number one, especially if you've got kids and you're getting up at silly o'clock. And, you know, what does it look like to move through that day feeling coherent, feeling tuned in, feeling switched on, feeling at peace, feeling like I don't have the weight of needing to constantly search for my next drink, or, you know, worse, saying something stupid or upsetting a family member, or crashing and burning at 7 p.m. and not even remembering the evening type of thing. So the other tool that I would use to help support that kind of thinking is the power of visualization. It's such a wonderful tool. And so for me, I find it quite easy to be visual, but maybe you don't find it easy to be visual. So I would say, if you don't find it easy to do that, then perhaps you might brainstorm and write it out. If you're more auditory, you might do that. But if you can be visual, visualize what success looks like on Christmas Day. Literally spend some time sitting and thinking about, what does it look like when I open my eyes on Christmas morning? What is that first thing I'm going to think? And obviously try as much as possible to think about the more positive aspects. So rather than waking up and thinking, this is so shit, I can't drink on Christmas Day, wake up and think, oh, brilliant, I'm not hungover. That's a win in itself. Okay, I'm going to go make a really lovely coffee or a lovely cup of tea. And I'm going to really enjoy my smoked salmon this morning, or my peanut butter on toast, you know, whatever it is that you're going to eat. Think about those things and visualize yourself in the picture of your mind enjoying those things. The more you can practice doing that, the more, unbelievably actually, your brain doesn't know that the visual is not reality. Okay, that's the wonderful thing, the power of visualization, is that your brain will actually think that that's real life if you keep visualizing and keep seeing that. And then obviously when you wake up on the day, there is a comfort in and security in knowing that, well, I've pictured this day, and with some flexibility, because things don't always go to plan, obviously, but, you know, there's a more positive edge to the day from waking up, because I've thought this through, I've prepared it in my head, I've planned what I'm going to drink, I know what I'm eating, I know how I'm going to cope with that particular part of the day when everyone usually has their first drink or this or that. And these are the things that I'm going to do for myself to support myself instead. And I've seen that in my mind, and I'm comfortable and connected with that vision. Hugely important. So then if you move on to, okay, well, you're going to have some conversations with people, and it's about, what is the story that you're going to tell other people? So for this, it's almost the same rules apply. How do you prepare for success? What do you say? So I'm a fan of less is more. And I know that from lived experience, because I was definitely oversharing too much in the early days when I first stopped drinking. And unfortunately, that just adds a lot of fuel to the fire and creates a big conversation around, you know, why I can't cope with alcohol, or why I feel like I'm not controlling it well. And it just puts too much of the spotlight on you, right? So my advice would be, keep it short, keep it positive. And so an example of that might be, oh yeah, I'm not drinking at the moment and I feel amazing for it. Full stop. here you have to challenge yourself, especially if you are a bit of an oversharer like me. You have to challenge yourself not to go too deep with that. You don't have to justify it to anyone, despite the fact that every fiber in your body wants you to overshare and to reassure people and to put people at ease and to tell people why it's probably only you and it's not anybody else that feels like, you know, you don't have to do all of that. So I've worked with a lot of people now, and we always use this strategy: short and sweet and positive. And it always works very well, because people don't have an avenue to explore when you sign off with something like, I feel amazing, or I feel really good for it, or I'm really enjoying it. Because what do people say then? Oh, but well, why would you, you know, like, but surely have a drink and don't feel like that. And so obviously you might still have people, especially pushy big drinkers in the family or friends, you're still going to have people that are going to be like, but surely on Christmas Day. But you just have to be kind of calm and cool in your reply. And no, I just don't feel like I need it. I'm really enjoying not drinking at the moment. And like I said, I'm feeling really good for it. So I want to carry that on. I want to see how long I can go. I want to see how far I can go. Oh, but surely not forever. Well, yeah, never say never. I just want to see how far I can go. You don't have to share the ins and outs with people, right? Especially people that are really challenging you. You got to remember that if you've got people challenging your decision to not drink, they probably have a problematic relationship with alcohol themselves. And you're holding up that mirror, and they cannot cope with the fact that you're not drinking, because, you know, it's uncomfortable for them, because probably somewhere deep down in their psyche, they probably know they shouldn't drink that much either. So always try to separate yourself from those kinds of conversations and try not to take them too personally. I always think it says a lot more about them and not you. But hopefully lots of people will just say, great, well, good for you. Or they may say, oh, I wish I could do that, actually. I feel like I could benefit from that. I'm probably going to do dry January. And then you're going to think, yeah, cool. Like, if you stop drinking today, by the end of January, you'll be 46 days sober. If you stop today, you might have stopped last week or the week before, so you'll be over 50 days. People that stop now or around now will be 100 days by the end of March. So, you know, there's a lot to look forward to. And I think that really summarizes that point really nicely, is that rather than being in the energy that you are missing out, that you are losing something, try and explore shifting into a space where it's a privilege to be sober. It's a privilege to be in an energy where you don't have to drink to make anything better. You can make that better on your own. You know, that's really positive. But unfortunately, we tend to go into the tunnel of sobriety under a cloud of shame, feeling bad, feeling different, feeling mortified that we can't control our drinking. And we forget that alcohol is highly addictive and that it is designed to be addictive, right? It's literally pushed on us everywhere we go. It's advertised everywhere. The conversations and the social conditioning is that you need a drink to be cool and to have fun. But actually, when you step out of that narrative, you see it so differently. It's not easy to do that in the very beginning, I will admit. But certainly when you get more comfortable in your sober skin, you really start to think, God, how did I, like, why is everyone thinking this? Because it's not true. Not drinking is so much better. But obviously you have to help yourself get a little bit into that frame of mind. So that's why that conscious effort to recalibrate your thinking, starting with awareness. What is my story? What am I thinking about my story with drinking? How do I change that? How do I make that more supportive and more positive and more helpful in my early journey? And then how can I support that by visualizing success? And then on top of that, what do I say? Like, how do I externalize that in a way that is congruent all the way through, from the way that I feel inside outwardly to what I say to people? How do I believe what I say that I'm really actually enjoying not drinking at the moment. You know, apart from the few odd bits of discomfort, on the whole, it's really positive.
Okay, so one of the other things that I think is really good to focus on, especially I would say in the first 6 months, 6 to 12 months, but certainly in the first 6 months, and that can be anything from the first few days, first 100 days, up to that kind of 6 month period, is remembering the context and the context differences. So what I mean by that is your life up until you stopped drinking would have played out a certain way. And if you're in this place where you're not drinking anymore, it's highly likely that it would have been quite alcohol fueled, or that you would have had a solid and consistent relationship with alcohol. And so if you have got that solid, consistent relationship with alcohol, then you've essentially wired your brain to rely on drinking. Maybe drinking was every day. Maybe drinking was every week. Maybe drinking was always on a Friday or always at big social events. And what you do over the years, sometimes decades, is you essentially train your brain to want that alcohol. You train your brain to rely on that alcohol. And if you do that, and you do that regularly and frequently and over a long period of time, when you first stop drinking, or for the first few months, it's going to feel very different whilst you recalibrate. So there is this period of recalibration. Okay, so you're going to be going from having the alcohol to not having the alcohol. But in each situation, that might look differently, right? So for example, if you always drank on social occasions or always drank on Fridays, there is going to be a lot of discomfort whilst you collect evidence of not drinking and being okay. Also being happy in those situations, obviously, but certainly navigating them and coping with them without drinking will feel a bit awkward. It will feel different. Not bad necessarily, just different. And remembering that different feels uncomfortable. And so trying to remember as well that when you're used to drinking and you're used to having alcohol, you're essentially giving yourself an artificial chemical high with that alcohol. It's what I love to call the 15 out of 10 high. And that's the dopamine hit and other things. But just to keep it simple, that's the kind of 15 out of 10 dopamine hit. Now, when you don't drink, or when you stop drinking, let's say, you are going to notice that there's going to be a period of coming down from those 15 out of 10 highs. And that's going to make you feel quite flat. That's going to make life feel quite boring. It's not that life is flat and boring, but it definitely is going to feel like that whilst you recalibrate. And so it might take you months for you to get back up to the sort of more natural dopamine highs of 7s, 8s, 9s, and 10s. But initially, 7s, 8s, 9s, and 10s are still way under that 15 out of 10. And so that period of recalibration, coming down from the artificial high and relearning how to give yourself the natural dopamine highs, there's a big bit of space in between that. If you imagine that you start to build dopamine at a 7, but you're coming down from a 15, that is half the high of the 15 out of 10. So it's just having that awareness of the context that you're in when you're in early sobriety, and trying not to make it mean more than it is. It's just a period of recalibration whilst you try to adjust from the artificial high down to the more building natural dopamine. And there is this infographic that I've seen on, you know, some other accounts on social media, that the dopamine high from alcohol is an immediate sharp spike up to, you know, the sort of, let's say, the 15 out of 10. It's immediate, very, very tall spike, and it drops straight back down again. And that's when we talk about you know, you have a drink and then you have a bit of a crash. And actually what's happening on a brain physiology point of view is that your brain is gearing you up to need that next drink so that you can try and hit that same high, which you never can, right? It's always, it's downhill from the first one or two drinks. And that's because you get the endorphins, the dopamine from the chemical high of alcohol, but then your brain goes, hang on a minute, something's out of sync here. We need to go back to homeostasis. Let's release some dynorphin, which is actually the opposite of an endorphin, and that's to bring you back down. So your brain is actually trying to bring you back down, and that's why you're constantly chasing that high, and why we talk about the two drink high, and that's the highest you'll ever get, really. It's all downhill from there. But when you're trying to think about that period of recalibration and the dopamine that spiked up really high and then dropped off really quickly, when you build natural dopamine, it is usually slower to build, right? It takes more energy and effort to build up, but when it gets up to the 7s, 8s, 9s, and 10s, it tends to stay there for longer. So it gives you a good feeling for longer, makes you feel better for longer. And it's not that immediate crash back down like you get from alcohol. So think about your journey and where you are in relation to this and to this context. Are you feeling a bit flat? Does life feel a bit bland? Could it be that you're still recalibrating? The answer to that question is probably yes. And what can you do to try and make that easy, that process? How do you make that better? How do you make it easy for yourself? Well, it might be simply tuning into a little bit more self-care. It might be listening to your body, doing a little bit less. You know, are you overdoing it, especially in this season where there's a lot of social engagements and there's a lot of things to do?
And with a lot of things to do, there's a lot of expectations. And I think a lot of this is about managing those expectations, particularly the ones that you place on yourself. Just because you've always been a certain way or been a certain person or socialized in a certain format doesn't mean that you have to continue doing those things or being that person. You are allowed to change. And I think it's easy to trip up over that we feel like, well, we're not meant to change or it's not okay to change. Give yourself permission to change. Give yourself permission to do it differently. Check out the standards that you're holding yourself against. It's okay to feel a bit flat and feel a bit rubbish and feel a bit down, feel a bit sad, feel a bit... It's okay to envy sometimes the friends that are going out and doing the things that you feel like you wish you could do now because you're not doing them. I think so much of this is a process of acknowledging where we really are and feeling what we're really feeling, but then moving on into that reframing of our experience to support ourselves and to help us move forward in a positive way. And then finally, I wanted to cover managing moments of discomfort. And going into this, I think it's important to be aware of the fact that there will be moments of discomfort. There will be pockets of feeling stress, of feeling overwhelmed, of feeling what we more commonly refer to as feeling triggered. You know, feeling like, oh, I just want to have a drink to relieve me of this feeling or of this situation or of this impending discomfort. And so handling discomfort is a huge skill to build and develop and to put into your emotional sobriety toolbox. And I say build and develop for a reason, because I think sometimes it's easy to berate ourselves because we feel like we should just be able to do this stuff. But it's very normal to stop drinking and then look at your emotional coping toolbox and see it's very empty and it's looking bare in there. And, you know, that can be quite frightening and quite overwhelming. For me, I stopped drinking at 41 and I realized fairly soon after that I actually didn't know how to handle life. I didn't know how to cope with big emotions and big situations and big stresses. I just
Yeah, I was became quite aware of that feeling of not having the alcohol there and then not knowing what else to do instead to help me manage and cope. And so I just wanted to reassure any of you that might be feeling that, might be feeling like you're lacking emotional resilience. Well, if you've used alcohol to help you feel better for a long time, you of course will not have strong emotional resilience because alcohol was kind of playing down those situations or those feelings or taking some of the sting out of those moments because the alcohol was blunting those situations and the emotions attached to it. So yeah, don't be too hard on yourself if you suddenly stop drinking and then realize, I don't know actually how to handle this stuff, or I don't know what to do if big things come up and hit me in the face. And I think the expectation there to get used to is that those things will come. Okay, it's not a case of if bad stuff is going to happen to me or bad stuff's going to come and ruin my day. It's always going to be when that, like that. That's a given. Those things will come up. Life is still life. It's still going to be challenging. It's still going to be up and down. It's still going to be tricky to navigate. And you are still going to get hit with things that you do not know how to handle. And I think just allowing yourself the grace to not have a full toolbox and to not be well equipped to deal with those things, I think that's important, because what you don't need on top is a big chunk, if you like, a big chunk of kind of extra stress because you're feeling like you don't know how to handle these things. So handling discomfort will come, we know that, and it's about how can we prepare for that discomfort because we know it's going to come, and how can we get creative when we haven't prepared but that it shows up. So what do I mean by that? So I think the first thing is, when you know what your drinking looks like, or when you know that you're going to be, when you look at the week ahead, okay, you can see the week ahead or the next 2 weeks even, you probably know when you're going to feel most triggered to drink. Because if you always drink on a Friday, or if you always drank on a Friday, you are going to probably feel quite triggered on a Friday. You're going to feel lots of discomfort on a Friday because your brain is going to be reminding you and saying, hey, here's some dopamine. Let's remind you of how nice that feeling of drinking alcohol was. And if you don't give it what it wants, it's going to feel uncomfortable and unusual. It's going to feel a bit strange, and that makes you feel discomfort. So I think planning for success is important here. Planning particularly for the times when you would normally drink, and it's the same for Christmas. If you would normally have your first glass of wine on Christmas Day at 10 o'clock, or you know, champagne or whatever, it's trying to set yourself up with a plan that is going to help you muddle through those moments of discomfort. So the way that I would plan my day, for example, I would, on Christmas Day, I might have a drink by lunch or something like that. So for me, I was very focused on waking up and feeling really good and acknowledging that I was feeling really good. I'd be focused on having a really nice coffee, like a nice cafetiere coffee, because that's something that I treasure in the morning. I would be thinking about what nice things I could have for breakfast. I would make sure that I'd have some kind of nice soft drink or alcohol-free alternative in the fridge. And I would just be planning little micro distractions, or, you know, just planning things for my day and for when I know that I'd be feeling that discomfort. So for you, outside of the Christmas Day planning, it might be weekends, it might be every night. What can you do to prepare distractions for those times? Another example is that I used to always have wine when I was cooking dinner. So kind of 5:30, I'd be cooking dinner. There'd always be a glass of wine poured. And that would be that. That was my routine for at least 3 or 4 nights in a week. So the way that I would combat that is that I would have a great podcast on the go or an audiobook. My headphones would live in a drawer in the kitchen. And every time I would start preparing dinner, I would put the headphones in, I'd put the podcast on. So I was still doing the dinner thing. And often, actually, I would also have an alcohol-free beer. In the early days, I had some of those alternatives. But you might have an elderflower spritz or a cup of mint tea. But I would have the content going in, and that would be providing a really useful distraction. I'd be able to make the food because I'd be usually cooking for my children. It wouldn't be extremely complicated. It'd probably be like omelette and chips. So it'd be quite easy to do that on autopilot. But then I'd have this content going in and it would be creating distraction. But actually, it would be win-win for me because it would be putting positive messages into my brain and helping to challenge me on my perspective. You know, listening to other people's stories, for example, or some of the science around drinking and how alcohol affects you. And I just loved that kind of content, and I would listen to that when I knew that my body perhaps would be looking for that alcohol. So I think planning for success, particularly the next week ahead, not going too far, because we don't want to go too far into the future, because then we create kind of anxiety around that. You know, like, oh, I've got a wedding in 3 months and I'm really anxious about that. Well, I would say park that for now. Let's just try and think sort of this next day or this next week ahead. What can you plan, and when will you need to plan those distractions, and what might those distractions look like? And it will be different for every person. But for me, I had the headphones at tea time. In the evenings, I taught myself how to crochet. So that was one distraction that was a bit different to what I was doing if I was just sitting watching telly and drinking. Sometimes I'd go out for a walk. Sometimes I would have a bath and read. I'd get into my books quite a lot in early sobriety. I might be journaling. Maybe I would just plan some nice things, maybe at the weekend, some different stuff that I hadn't done before. Connections with people that I could trust not to be, you know, big drinkers. And having things to look forward to. I do think it's important to have things to look forward to, even if they're just personal things, like going to a yoga class. Doesn't have to be big celebration style kind of meeting up with friends and stuff like that, because some of you might be feeling like that's too overwhelming to do that, depending on where you are in the journey. So yeah, worth bearing that in mind. And I think when the cravings come, when you know, feel really triggered to drink, the one question that I always think is helpful is to ask yourself, what is it that I really need? Because from experience, from personal experience and experience of working with others, the craving to drink is often the byproduct of an unmet need. So usually, if you've got to the point where you need alcohol, or your brain is thinking, I want to drink, I want to drink, I want to drink. If you're able to go 2 or 3 steps back, or even to earlier in that day, you can perhaps start to see things building or things popping up, or you know, instinct that you're not tuning into that's giving you messages and is trying to guide you that you're kind of ignoring for whatever reason. You can usually identify that as an unmet need. So an example might be, You're at a social situation. You're in a social situation with people, and it's a drinking situation, and you stay longer than you intended, or you stay longer than you really wanted to. And so you might have done a couple of hours. You're ready to go home, but you don't listen to that inner nudge of like, I want to go home now. Perhaps you're worrying about upsetting your husband, or looking bad in front of your friends, or looking boring, or all of these stories that we can tell ourselves. But actually what happens is, by not listening to that little bit of inner wisdom that's coming up and kind of soldiering on through the evening, you get to 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night, and then you start people start saying, have a drink, come on, just have one, it's Christmas, blah, blah, blah. And you feel really close to succumbing, or you do succumb and you have a drink. And then, you know, afterwards, you obviously feel bad, maybe you feel like you let yourself down. And then you think, why did that happen? I just couldn't help that. But actually, perhaps when you look back over that night, there was that little nudge saying, go home. You know, you've had enough. Like, this is enough. Actually, this is boring to me now. So, you know, that's one example of where sometimes we get the nudge internally. For whatever reason, that can sometimes be hard to tune into, because perhaps we are used to not listening to it, or it feels too uncomfortable to act on it. We worry too much perhaps about what people think, and therefore we prioritize other people and their needs over our own. And the cost of that really actually means that we hurt ourselves. So either we feel great discomfort, we feel quite fed up or quite fatigued or quite tired, or we get close to drinking, or worst case, we actually have a drink. So it's just worth thinking about that, and thinking about in your life where you might have noticed when you've had cravings to have alcohol, what came before it, or what didn't happen before it. You know, what action didn't you take that might help you next time when you get yourself into a bit of a sticky situation when it comes to alcohol cravings? And just lastly on this, there's obviously, you know, a couple of big tools here that can help you in those moments when you feel that really great discomfort. And if you haven't perhaps tuned into your instinct and acted accordingly, and you do find yourself in a situation where you're really craving alcohol, there's a couple of things you can do. One is immediate distraction. Take a break. Go into a different room, or stand up, walk about, take some deep breaths. Like, just try and snap yourself out of that situation, because distraction is really your best friend in this situation, for sure. But the second tool, which is a common tool in this sober space, is the play it forward tool. So thinking about almost like a movie in your head, okay, what happens if I have that drink? Okay, it's 9 o'clock now, I have the drink, I tell myself it would just be one, but based on history and evidence that I've got, what actually really happens in this situation? Well, obviously you have another one, and then you'll have another one. And when you're two or three drinks in, you're going to have 10 more on top of that. So what happens is, instead of going home to bed 10 o'clock tonight, like I thought I would, and getting up for an early spinning class in the morning or whatever it is that you've got planned, just not feeling hungover. Instead, what happens is I'm out until 3 o'clock in the morning tonight. And maybe I'll do something else stupid. Maybe I'll sleep with someone, or take some recreational drugs, or I'll just act like a fool. I'll be dancing on, you know, tables that people don't normally dance on, or whatever it is for you, whatever that picture looks like for you. You know that better than anybody. And then you get in at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, and you feel groggy already before you've gone to sleep, and you're already feeling that feeling of, why did I do this? I'm regretting this already, but I'm drunk, but I kind of am aware of that of that undertone of regret that I'm feeling. You wake up at 5 in the morning, you need water. 6 o'clock, you need headache tablets. 7 o'clock, the shame cloud hits. 8 o'clock, you're already late for work. You've missed your spinning class, you know, blah, blah, blah. All day, next day, you feel terrible. You have got to reset the clock again if you're counting days, and that's important. Just all this other stuff. Like, think that stuff through moment by moment and connect as deeply as you can with what the real outcome is, the real cost of giving in this moment when you know you don't want to, but for whatever reason there is some discomfort or some unmet need that just needs to be actioned. So I hope that you found that really useful. I hope that it provided a bit of insight into how to navigate some of the other things that we maybe don't talk about. You know, go deeply into some different kinds of tips. that I hope that you will find helpful and that you can kind of jot these down, put them in your emotional toolbox, probably your sparse emotional toolbox, and just give yourself some credit for even being here and for doing this. You know, anyone that tries to stop drinking or has stopped drinking and is going on this journey after having a bit of a complicated, let's say, relationship with alcohol, is doing amazing. You know, it's so hard to stop drinking in a society that we live in today that really, really values and idolizes alcohol. You know, alcohol is very much on a pedestal, and you'll notice that in the shops that you go in and the conversations that you have at the parties you attend, you know, the stuff that you watch on TV. I mean, it literally is being glamorized everywhere. Social media, that's another big one, isn't it? Social media, with all the pictures on the feed of people clinking glasses and looking very glamorous. You know, for my advice with that is mute that stuff. Try and mute as much as you can. That just takes some of that out of the periphery and just helps you to focus, laser focus on what you know in your heart and is what you want. And it's you know, what you're aligned with. And it's you stepping into that power, if you like, and just saying, I'm going to do this for me. I want to be healthier. I want to challenge myself to see what it feels like to live properly in an alcohol-free life and to get the rewards and the benefits from that, because they will come. I promise you, they will come. It might feel like it's not coming for a long time. It might feel like, oh my God, I feel like I've been doing this for ages. It's not coming, it's not coming, it's not coming. And then one day, bang, there it is. You start to live it, see it, feel it, breathe it. And it's all there and it's all available for you. You deserve to have this time in your life where you want to live this, you know, without alcohol and all the pressures that alcohol brings and all the bad feeling and the regret and the sadness and the not fulfilling your potential and all that stuff. So on that note, have a very, very lovely Christmas and New Year, and I'll be back in the new year with more sober stories. So thank you for listening. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.